Hello, Madison. Welcome to the Wisconsin Energy Broadcast, a show about clean tech, renewable energy, and the ways this rapidly growing industry is changing how we think about power. The Wisconsin Energy Broadcast is a project of the Perpetual Notion Machine. Now, here's your host, Heather Allen and Nan Fay.
I'm here with Chelsea Chandler at the Wisconsin Academy of Sciences, Arts, and Letters. She is the Environmental Initiatives Director. She has studied both atmospheric science and environmental management. Her master's is from the Yale School of Forestry, and she has worked on air pollution and environmental justice. We're really excited to have you here today, Chelsea, because we want to talk about this 2017 Climate Forward Report, which is a roadmap for Wisconsin's climate and energy future. So what I hope to hear from you today are, what are the big trends in Wisconsin's energy path and what we can look forward to next? Why don't we just dig in a little bit? What do you think are the biggest advances in renewable energy in Wisconsin in the last 10 years?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me and giving me the opportunity to talk about Climate Forward. In terms of renewables, we are really at a point where, you know, the costs are coming down and installations are just mushrooming across the state. So I think that this statistic in particular is very telling, and I love this. In 2016 in Wisconsin, we installed more solar capacity than in all prior years combined. So in just 1 year, we doubled our capacity. And that was just last year, which was, you know, the hottest year on record for, I think, the third consecutive year. So it is timely. But I think that that's both really exciting because we're seeing how much we can accomplish in a short time. And also we're seeing the momentum that we are dealing with right now. So there's a lot of really great projects across the state. For instance, in solar, Dairyland Power Cooperative is a huge driver of these installations. They're based in La Crosse. Last year, they announced plans for over a dozen solar installations for over 20 megawatts of renewable power. There's 12 projects, I believe, currently online, and another few that should be generating electricity by the end of the year. That is kind of spurring other projects. WPPI and NextEra announced earlier this year an agreement to build a 100 megawatt solar energy project. And that's going to be the biggest solar installation in our state when it comes online.
Where's that going to be located?
That is at the Point Beach Solar Energy Center. Yeah, in Eastern. Community solar is also really taking off. That's been hugely popular. So the first project in the state was by Vernon Electric, and that was back in 2014. It was a 305 kilowatt solar farm, and that was a partnership between Vernon Electric and Dairyland, again, who's their power or their energy supplier.
Can I jump in there?
Yeah.
What is community solar?
Yeah. So community solar is a great flexible model where basically you can purchase a panel in a community solar farm. So you don't have to install panels directly on your residence. If, for instance, you're in the shade, your house is, you know, the roof isn't facing the right way. If you are a renter and you wouldn't make that kind of investment where you're living, it's just there's sort of a simpler entree into owning that kind of renewable power. And you don't have to worry about any of the maintenance or the installation. You basically just buy a panel and you own that panel. You can go visit the panel. A lot of people like doing that. A lot of these solar farms have, you know, goats or sheep grazing. Some incorporate like butterfly, like monarch habitat. So they're often kind of fun, picturesque solar farms, but people have really taken to the model because it's you still get sort of the economy of scale, and it makes sense to build, you know, a farm altogether of solar panels. I think you can get more engagement from people who, for one reason or another, are more reluctant to install panels on their own property.
That's a wonderful alternative, too, for people who are not homeowners.
Exactly. Yeah, there's not as much that renters can do in terms of, you know, installing renewables or even energy efficiency sometimes, just because they don't have the ownership of the property. So that is a great opportunity.
I was on the Renew Energy bike ride a few weekends ago, and we actually stopped by the Middleton Community Solar Project.
Mm.
We stopped by the Middleton Community Solar Project, and it was really exciting to see that it was up and running. I think they have maybe 1,700 panels, and they're doing 500 kilowatts of power generation. Mm-hmm. It's great that you can sort of buy into the project without having to do any sort of infrastructure on your own property, and that's been really popular for them. Can I just ask you, how do we compare? How do we compare to other states? Back in your first 2014 report, your organization said that it was technically possible to supply 100% of Wisconsin's energy needs, but whether it was practical or economically feasible is another story. So I understand that 10% of our electricity generally comes from renewables, but half of that is from out-of-state wind power. And so we're meeting that 10% goal set by the state standard, the renewable portfolio standard. But what comes next for us, and what are the other states doing?
Yeah, what comes next is a great question. As you mentioned, we do have a renewable portfolio standard in place that dictates that we have to generate 10% of our electricity from renewable sources. That was by 2015. We actually met that 2 years early in 2013, so that was fantastic. But we haven't adopted any more ambitious goals since then. Meanwhile, some of our neighboring Midwest states are taking next steps, and they're looking at renewable goals that are much higher. So, for instance, Minnesota is looking at about 25% by 2025. Same with Illinois, 25% by 2025. Ohio, 25% by 2026. Michigan is requiring 15% by 2021, but then has a goal of 35% by 2025. So they are all looking at much loftier goals, and that can really help as they're looking and planning new renewable installations in the future. They've got that guidance and that goal to look forward to, and we don't currently have that in Wisconsin.
Do we know, are they looking to solar and wind, or are some of those states ones that may include nuclear installations?
I'm not sure about nuclear specifically. My understanding is that the renewable standard does include, you know, more than just solar and wind. So I think probably hydro, maybe biomass. I'm not an expert on what the other states include in that.
You mentioned something about, Heather, about our getting a lot of our power and renewable energy power in Wisconsin from wind. Mm-hmm. Chelsea, can you tell us a little bit about how that's happening and whether we're doing offshore wind in Wisconsin?
So when you look at a potential map of Wisconsin, like the wind potential, you'll see there's a reason why we install some of our farms in Iowa, because they just have a better resource there. And so it kind of makes sense to go where the source is and then transport the energy back, although then you have some transmission losses. There's issues with transmission lines and so on. Offshore is an area where we do have a lot more potential, wind potential, than on land. So that's an opportunity. You know, there's other barriers there in terms of infrastructure. I think it can be a little harder to build, you know, off land. So I don't believe that we are doing much on offshore. I know that there's been some studies, especially about the opportunity, but that could be a direction we could go if we're looking to harness where we've got the best wind potential in Wisconsin. You know, that's really where it is. This year, so the first utility-scale wind project in Wisconsin since 2011 is nearing completion, and that is in southwest Wisconsin. So that's in Lafayette County. It's called the Wisconsin Quilt Block Wind Farm, and that's a 98-megawatt wind farm in Seymour. So that's going to provide electricity for Dairyland's members. And that is close to completion. So that's the first utility scale, kind of larger scale project that we've seen completed in Wisconsin in recent years. We are still looking for other opportunities in Iowa. For instance, earlier this year, MG&E, Madison Gas and Electric, announced a proposal for another wind farm that it would own and operate, and that's based in Howard County in Iowa. And again, they picked that site because there's good wind potential, and it is actually close to some existing transmission lines, so it is a kind of logical place to site the project. And that could start the construction as early as next year and go online by the end of the year. And that would be a big project. It would be the biggest one that MG&E owns and would be operating to date.
That project is, it would be, you said, did you say Howard County, Iowa? So that's about, what, 200 miles west of Madison?
Yes. Yep.
And, okay, just for our engineer buffs in the audience, do you happen to know at what voltage wind power is transmitted?
Oh, I wish I did. I did once. It's no longer in my brain.
We'll look that up for you, Dad. We'll look that up. Okay, great. Thank you. So something I noticed in your report are that the electric co-ops, and you've mentioned Dairyland Cooperative a number of times, the electric co-ops have been front and center in doing renewable projects. That seven of Wisconsin's 24 electric cooperatives have community solar, mm-hmm. and seven more have projects on the way. So why is it that co-ops are turning out to be early adopters in renewable energy?
I think that they're looking to meet their member demand. There's a lot of interest publicly around renewables, and the cooperatives are the system that the cooperatives are working on under is, you know, they are working to serve their members. And so when they're hearing from their members that they do want these solar farm, these community solar projects and other renewables, I think that they're responding to that. Also, as, you know, prices are coming down for solar especially, it just makes economic sense. You know, any utility is looking to provide low-cost power for their members or stakeholders. And so it's sort of a responsible thing to do to seek out the sources that are going to provide that for their members.
Great. Thank you.
It also strikes me that the cooperative movement in general has been more about collective and public good than about individual good. So in some ways, just philosophically, that makes a certain amount of sense.
Yeah.
To me, anyway.
Yeah.
One of the high points of the report, I think, was a study by Lazard that utility scale wind and solar are now comparable to or lower cost than the cost of energy derived from conventional coal and gas-fired plants. So do you want to just talk a little bit about the market shift and how the change in prices of these various energy sources is affecting the state of play in Wisconsin?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's a huge impact when the prices are dropping so quickly over time. You can look at a chart where the prices drop and then at the same time the installations are just rising. So as I was saying before, it makes sense that we want the lowest cost power options. In Wisconsin, we have very high electricity rates, retail electricity rates, and that's an issue of concern for, you know, any hardworking family, for people on fixed income, you know, the elderly. It's a real challenge and something that we need to work to improve. So when costs are dropping so quickly, you know, we respond to that in a level playing field. If you're looking for the lowest cost power that you can implement, if that's solar, then fantastic. You will install more solar capacity.
How do these changing markets translate into jobs in the Wisconsin economy? You know, what do you anticipate happening going forward? I think I read in your report that around 2,800 solar workers are in the industry in Wisconsin. That includes installers, manufacturing, sales and distribution, project development, and I believe there's more associated jobs.
Mm-hmm.
The Solar Foundation Solar Job Census said that Wisconsin is about 26th in the nation for solar jobs. But we're a leader in manufacturing components for wind, mm-hmm. for the wind industry. Do you anticipate? Are there trends showing that we're going to be able to increase those types of jobs in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I think so. If there are, you know, more renewable installations, we're going to have more components that are associated with that. And, you know, the same with the solar industry. So as we see more installations, we'll have more solar companies installing those panels. So have to sacrifice jobs for the environment, and we don't have to sacrifice the environment for jobs. You know, there's this whole sector, kind of the green collar economy, where there are really good clean energy jobs that we can support. You know, you mentioned the Solar Foundation's report that's speaking just to the solar industry. There was another report that came out recently that was talking about clean energy jobs more broadly. The Clean Jobs Midwest report showed that between 2015 and 2016 in Wisconsin, clean energy jobs grew almost 7%, which is six times faster than jobs overall. So it's a fast-growing segment of our economy. And I think that it makes sense that that would continue given, the trends we're seeing in the installations and the market.
I thought it was interesting. Over the weekend, there was a news item that a Texas utility is going to be closing down two coal-fired plants because the cost of renewable energy and natural gas has gotten so low that it's not economically feasible to keep running these coal plants. So that's an interesting trend for utilities actually to be taking in coal. States that have been very energy dependent on fossil fuels to be taking coal power offline.
Absolutely.
Even said that the plants are economically challenged because of low wholesale power prices, the expansion of renewables, and the low cost of natural gas. So I think these trends are happening all over the country and changing how companies do their calculus about what makes sense. Is there anything else from your 2017 Climate Forward report that you'd like to share with us about trends or things to watch out for in the coming years, things that we should be paying attention to?
I think a couple of the key trends that we pulled out of the report were, first of all, that locals really are leading. We're seeing a ton of movement and momentum in local government. They're leading the way. There's municipalities that are adopting renewable goals, like Madison with the 100% renewable energy. Middleton voted on the referendum to support a federal carbon price. So while largely symbolic, they are still kind of...
If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Wisconsin Energy Broadcast on WORT 89.9 FM, Madison. This is a project of the Perpetual Notion Machine, WORT's longstanding science show. We are speaking with Chelsea Chandler of the Wisconsin Academy of Sciences, Arts, and Letters. She leads the environment and climate initiatives at the Academy. Right now, we're discussing its recent report called Climate Forward, a new roadmap for Wisconsin's climate and energy future. Is there anything else from your 2017 Climate Forward report that you'd like to share with us about trends or things to watch out for in the coming years, things we should be paying attention to?
I think a couple of the key trends that we pulled out of the report were, first of all, that locals really are leading. We're seeing a ton of movement and momentum in local government. They're leading the way. There's municipalities that are adopting renewable goals, like Madison with the 100% renewable energy. Middleton voted on the referendum to support a federal carbon price. So while largely symbolic, they are still kind of putting their stance out there. We're seeing a lot of solar group buys in cities, these community solar projects. So we're really seeing that local leaders are stepping up despite not having necessarily as much of a top-down framework for policy, or like I mentioned, the renewable portfolio standard hasn't been upped in recent years, but we're seeing that momentum and that movement kind of from the bottom up. So I think that's really, really promising and where there's a lot of action these days. We're also seeing that movement in the private sector. So there's a lot of companies that are installing huge renewable installations. We're seeing utilities are adopting their own goals for renewables. So all the major Wisconsin utilities have articulated goals that they're looking to meet. So I think that, as I said, in the absence of sort of federal or state level guidance, I think that local leaders and businesses are charging ahead, and that's really promising. And that's a lot of the momentum that we're looking to support.
That's very helpful. Thank you so much. Can I ask you, just on a more personal level, why is this work important to you? Why are you working on climate issues?
I think that it's one of the most important issues of our day. I think that we're kind of at a potentially a turning point. Science tells us that we basically need to act now. Yesterday would have been better, but now is the next best option. And we're really looking to try to mitigate some potentially bad impacts that, I will live with, that, the next generation will live with. And so I think that it is a concern not just, you know, in the environmental field, it's so much broader than that. It's about social equity. You know, it's about the people that are contributing to the problem aren't feeling the worst impacts. Although I think everyone is starting to feel more and more impacts. You know, it's hitting the United States now. We've seen this year with the hurricane season, you know, hitting Texas, Florida, Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands, you know, not to mention the rest of the Caribbean. All the wildfires we've seen this summer in the Northwest and California. My brother-in-law is a firefighter and he's fighting those fires right now. So that's personal. When I'm not at the academy, I also run an organic produce farm in the Driftless area. And we had some really challenging flooding this season to the point where there was one day where I had to meet a delivery and the mud branch of the Pecatonica River runs through our farm. And it was so swollen. It was, you know, 100 feet wide. It was impassable. And we actually got a canoe out and paddled out to the field so we could harvest our vegetables for the day. So we're feeling these impacts now. And, you know, I want to do something about it. I think that even though historically, I think sometimes the environmental movement has been pegged as sort of this niche or kind of a exclusive or elitist branch, you know, that you can work in, I really think that it penetrates into all you know, areas of our society. And I think that, you know, morally, it's something that I want to contribute to lessening my impact and help others to be able to do the same.
Well, thank you so much for your work and your passion for it.
Thanks.
So we're trying out a new segment this week. We're going to call it Orchids and Onions for now. Some of you may recall that I believe it might have been the Isthmus that ran an annual Orchid and Onion Award for architectural contributions to the community. The orchid, obviously, for ones that were lovely, and the onions for one that were less so. We thought that we would like to award orchids this week to two people who are taking the lead in forging a new energy future for Puerto Rico under the circumstances of Hurricane Maria having devastated its existing grid. And they are the governor of Puerto Rico, Ricardo Rosselló, and Elon Musk. And apparently, if you've been following this story, the governor reached out to Mr. Musk to talk with him about the potential for rebuilding infrastructure on the island of Puerto Rico in the wake of the hurricane using some cutting-edge technology. And we have yet to see what that might look like on an island-wide basis, but Elon Musk and Tesla have so far provided the 300 solar panels. 3,000 have so far provided 3,000 solar panels in the parking lot of a children's hospital in order to provide 24/7 energy that's needed for the care of a number of children who are there at the moment who need that kind of round-the-clock care. This is a children's hospital that that serves about 3,000 Puerto Rican children in a given year. So we think this may be the beginning of a really interesting story that we'll be following as we learn more.
That's right. And so it Puerto Rico, while more than 75% of people are without power, and the island had suffered not one but two major hurricanes, first Maria and then Irma on the September 20th. By October 24th, the Children's Hospital was up and running with Tesla solar panels and storage so that they have energy 24 hours a day now. So that's our orchid. But crazy other big things are happening in Puerto Rico, too. You may have seen in the news that Whitefish Energy was granted a $300 million no-bid contract for helping to rebuild the Puerto Rican energy grid. That contract was approved by PREPA, the Puerto Rican Electric Power Authority. And there are a number of questions about that no-bid contract. apparently, Whitefish Energy is a small energy company that previously, until very recently, had just two employees and was based in Montana. And it is now on the hook for a major grid installation in Puerto Rico, where the wages of some of the contractors and subcontractors average between $200, $300 to $400 per hour, depending on the work involved. There are some highlights from this contract that say that in no event shall PREPA, the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, the FEMA Administrator, the Comptroller General of the United States, or any of their authorized representatives have a right to audit or review the cost and profit elements. So when a terrible tragedy like this strikes, there is an opportunity to make change. And I think that you see actors from all sides of the spectrum seizing that opportunity. And in this case, there are some serious questions raised by FEMA itself and by the governor of Puerto Rico. Once again, Ricardo Rossello has said that he wants this contract canceled, but he has called on the directors, the board of directors of governors of the of PREPA, the utility, to cancel the contract. So we will stay tuned. But right now, PREPA and Whitefish have earned an onion from the Wisconsin Energy Broadcast for not putting the people first and not putting speed, efficiency, and access to power and critical resources in their forefront. But rather, it appears that there is a major profit motivator in this contract and a serious lack of accountability and transparency. So we will see how this story evolves. And we actually have a much more local orchid that I'd like to talk about as well.
With mounting criticism of the contract, Puerto Rico actually canceled the Whitefish contract on October 29th. And we will wait to see what happens next with Puerto Rican efforts to rebuild the electrical grid. You've been listening to the Wisconsin Energy Broadcast, a project of the Perpetual Notion Machine. Tune in again 1 month from today for more news about clean energy and renewable technologies in Madison, Wisconsin, and the Midwest. We hope to see you then. We'd like to give a special thanks to our engineer, Douglas Allen, for his expertise engineering.